Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Captain America Minute, where we examine the 2011 Joe Johnston-directed feature, Captain America, the First Avenger, at the rate of 1 minute of screen time per episode. I'm one of your hosts, just a few miles from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. This is Jim O'Kane of TVDads.com.
And I'm Hal Bryan, an airplane nerd from the home of the Experimental Aircraft Association here in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
And I'm Brian Fees, a graphic novelist and lifelong Avengers comic book nerd. I'm sorry, comic book reader.
Oh, well, you
I'll
are a comic
nerd.
Book. Yeah. All the above.
I went off script. Leave that in. That's fine.
There's only one nerd on this program, mister.
I guess you'll have to be a geek instead.
Would that that were true.
Wow. Well, here we are. Here we are at the unfortunately named Minute 86, as we're about to 86 one of the main characters. So, Hal, why don't you tell us all about it?
All right. Here it comes. Minute 86. Steve Rogers clambers onto the side of the speeding Hydra train, the icy wind howling through the snowy mountain pass. Bucky Barnes dangles from a loose railing, his legs swinging over a gaping abyss. Hang on! Grab my hand! Steve shouts, stretching out a gloved hand, his face taut with desperation. The railing snaps. No! Steve cries as Bucky screams, plummeting with the metal into the snowy void, disappearing as the train roars on. Steve collapses against the train, sobbing, his best friend lost. Atop the train, Gabe Jones crashes into Dr. Arnim Zola's car at the front, leveling his machine gun at the startled scientist, whose eyes widen in fear. The scene shifts to the Strategic Scientific Reserve headquarters in London, where an MP escorts Zola into a Stark holding cell. The guard hands him his glasses, which Zola slips on, scanning the bare room. A dripping faucet echoes, and an empty gurney looms in the corner.
Well,
so much ominous foreshadowing about this little room.
Yeah. Bye-bye, Bucky. Well, for all of our current tense. But, it's sad. And whoever the railroad builders of who are out there, I got to admire them for the tallest viaduct in the world, I think. That has to be at least a half mile drop, I would think.
Oh, yeah. All the way down to the bottom of that canyon. Yeah.
Right.
Now named Bucky Canyon, just like in Back to the Future. Eastwood Ravine.
Exactly. Yes.
Eastwood Ravine and Bucky Canyon.
He passed a Balrog on the way down, and amazing. This is one of those classic scenes in a movie where you lose one of your beloved characters, and everybody in the audience goes, "Not Bucky." So,
I saw it coming.
Yeah.
Cheater.
I was up late last night pondering all the people we've lost in the middle of movies that we've felt sad about. And the first one that came to mind in my mind was Quint in Jaws.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's like he's a beloved character, always gone. And of course, I mean, right next to him, that was the 70s. Then in the 80s, of course, I know, Hal, you probably cried when we lost Goose.
Top
Gun. That was savage.
that's a heartbreaker, and that one I didn't necessarily see coming. You know, and you think these two guys, they're a team. I mean, you know, in retrospect, of course, it seems blindingly obvious. But that one I remember as a 17-year-old. Even I think still young enough that one surprised me. But then, of course, Hotshot comes around and lampoons it with Cary Elwes' call sign Dead Meat.
Yeah,
and you know, we don't know what's going to happen there. And poor John Cryer's call sign Washout. Is he going to pass flight training? Maybe not. The first one that I, that's not true. As I say, the first one that I sort of vividly remember would have been, and we talked about this offline. Of course, if you had Obi-Wan and Star Wars, but even before that, for me. Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru. And I just remember seeing that as a 9 and 10 year old on subsequent viewings. And it to me, it's sort of charming now, but I had to look away when they would show their skeletons when I was at that age. But the end all be all, not in the middle of a film, but I think the end all be all character death for me, it has to be Diana Rigg as Tracy and at the end of Honor Majesty's Secret Service.
Oh, yeah.
Spoiler alert if you haven't seen it. But that's just gut-wrenching, and we go right into you know, Lazenby quotes the song from the soundtrack, "We Have All the Time in the World," and he's crying. And then, you know, we go to Louis Armstrong singing the song, and it's devastating. And it's just as hard, if not harder, in the book, which book and film are about as close to each other, I would say, as the Bond books and films got.
Yeah. And the, you know, this is yet another girl that he's lost in the middle of things. I mean, bringing up another Bond movie, Aki in You Only Live Twice.
Oh, sure.
When she drinks the poison that's dripping down a thread.
Right.
Mm, yeah. Wow. But Diana Rigg was the only woman he loved. He married her. I'm with Hal. That hit hard. That was a tough one.
Well, and it was somehow it was a little harder because I think when I was too young to really understand what a crush was, I had crushes on three fictional female characters, two of which I will name. One was Diana Rigg as Emma Peel in The Avengers, and the other Yvonne Craig as Batgirl. So that Diana Rigg making such an impression on me as a really young kid, somehow that made it worse. Now, I didn't see Secret Service in the theaters, but. Well, not at first release. I would have seen in theaters, like on a re-release, but still a gut punch.
Are we going to have to get you drunk to find out number three?
I'm thinking it's Bugs Bunny and Drag, but that's just me.
Well, that's actually, you know what? That one might not be, it's not too far afield. Now, I have to be careful. This is not a collage.
I'm gonna take a guess, and Hal, you can just turn colors because nobody's gonna be seeing the video. I'm gonna go with Clarice from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Okay, wow, that one is up there. Cut. That was not the one that I was thinking of, but you're very much on the right track. You're hitting a lot of animals.
Yeah.
And I would just say that this character, who I will name, since that's not fair. Imagine like me at five thinking she would be nice to hug. Like maybe she would be nice as like a babysitter or something is all. And that would be Kim Hunter as Zira from
Planet Zira. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. No.
Oh my God. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, it's completely defensible.
I don't think I've ever felt more supported or more among friends than I do right now.
Oh, I'm with you.
I don't trot that one out often. And,
but she's got to wear the mask, you know?
Well,
it's got to be Zira. You want Zira, not Kim Hunter.
Yeah, the lips that don't pucker. It's just
But you're so damned ugly.
Ugly. Yes.
Oh. Anyway,
that was good. And of course,
I feel like we've made a real breakthrough here.
We did. Yes. Is your load lifted now, Hal? Yeah, your lifelong load. Wow. Jim and I, of course, were talking before we came on air about Marion Crane in Psycho, and that was a thunderclap of filmmaking there, that Hitchcock would dare set up this character to look like she was the hero of the movie. And this movie's going to be all about Marion stealing the money and getting away with it or not getting away with it. And then she's dead, man, pretty quick. And it's it was a shocker at the time. And it's still in filmmaking terms, in structural terms, a real surprise, a real breaking of the rules that Hitchcock pulled off there.
Yeah, she was the organizing sensibility. And the weirdest part of the whole thing is when she's dead, the only organizing sensibility left for the audience is Norman Bates. And that's why when you watch Norman, you know, cleaning up the hotel room, the motel room, and then stuffing Marion in a car and pushing her into a lake, you watch the car slowly sink into the lake, and then it pauses like it's not going to sink, and he leans forward, and the audience is like, "Oh, I hope he can get the body down under the water."
Yeah,
and it's like, "Wait, what am I doing?
Yeah,
why did you make me switch loyalties so fast?"
It's true though, and you know, I had the same thought along the lines of when Breaking Bad came out, and everybody starts pulling for Walter White and hitting all the people who were trying to catch this meth dealer. And apparently Vince Gilligan and the people who made that show were just totally nonplussed. They didn't understand why everybody thought Walter White was the hero when he was clearly the villain. Right. But he is, as you said, the organized sensibility. He's the protagonist. And we want the protagonists of our stories to succeed.
Yeah, and you know, they don't, like you were saying, they don't necessarily have to be the good guys. It's a shock, I think, and watching The Godfather when Sonny Corleone gets wiped out at the toll booth, and you're like, wait, isn't he like a main character? How did what happened to him? And you know, you know, there's others in other movies. There's like sacrificial lambs that you get rid of them so that the rest of the people have something to do. Like when Apollo Creed gets killed in at the opening of Rocky IV, you've loved him for three movies and then all of a sudden he's gone.
Right.
And you know, I think the strangest one is Rogue One, where you there's nobody. Everybody that you watched in the movie is gone.
Right.
You know, so it's
You know, and I actually had a, not to name drop, but I had a great discussion with John Knoll about that. It was the ILM visual effects guy who actually came up with the original story for Rogue One. And I you know, remember asking about that very thing. And you know, him saying that, you know, we were all talking. I thought, you know, there's no way that you know, the Star Wars machine is going to let us create popular characters and then kill them all, right? But I mean, that would be a powerful ending. So we asked, assuming that no, they all have to live, and they powers of B came back and said, no, that's fine. And
Wow. Kill them all.
ta-da, yeah, that's so there we are. You know, I think the I'll see your Apollo Creed gym, and I will not raise you. I will lower you to a sacrificial lamb that was pointless. That was a terrible sequel to a mediocre movie that I love, and that would be Doug Masters dying in the first few minutes of Iron Eagle 2.
Oh.
So Iron Eagle, he's the teenager who secretly knows how to fly and saves his dad, stealing an F-16 with Lou Gossett Jr. and blah blah blah. And then second movie, now he's an active duty Air Force guy, and we just shoot him down in 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's
And
John Connor in whatever the 18th version of the Terminator was, where they just wiped him out. It's it doesn't
right,
matter anymore.
yeah, exactly. John
It's
Rhett Connor.
yeah, and I mean, although this was real life, Ike Bukowski in October Sky would serve the same purpose of here's somebody
Yeah.
that gave, you know, everything was lost. You know, he was a main. A prime mover in the storyline, and he goes away about a third of the way through the movie.
Oh, again, we've wandered away from our, yeah, not entirely characters who die in the middle of a movie, but your discussion reminds me of Newt in Aliens 3. You know, in
Oh,
Aliens
yeah.
2, Ripley spends the entirety of Aliens 2 trying to save this little girl's life. And Aliens 3 opens up with, oh, she's dead. You know, it's like, Mike, what a useless, awful death. What a
Yeah.
horrible thing to do.
Almost as bad as doing away with Mutt in the latest Indiana Jones movie as we're recording this. It's like, oh yeah, he died in Vietnam.
I was okay with that, but yeah.
Well, yeah, it depends on whether you like that character or not, but yeah.
There is a trope in comics, pulling it back to comics and comic books, called fridging. And the idea comes from a Green Lantern story in which Green Lantern comes home back to his apartment and finds his girlfriend chopped into little bits in his refrigerator. And
Good
the
Lord.
idea, yeah, it was horrible. And the thought of fridging is it's a death of a character, usually a woman, usually a powerless woman, whose sole purpose is to motivate the hero, the male hero, to go out and avenge her death and right this wrong. The character serves no other purpose, and it's when you start looking for it happens a lot. The woman, the wife, the girlfriend who is killed or beaten up or assaulted or raped, who then becomes that action becomes the driving force for the male to go out and exact justice and revenge.
Right.
And it's rightly criticized, I think, as cheap, lazy writing, not giving the woman character her own agency and her own storyline, just making her a tool of the story to drive the plot. But the whole idea of fridging and this trope of women in refrigerators came from the comics.
Wow.
About what era was DC chopping people up and putting them in refrigerators?
Yeah, this was the 90s, and it was kind
Okay.
of a dark time in comics. It
All right.
was an era in which the people who wrote comics, who created comics, had grown up as fans of comics, and they thought comics should grow up with them.
Right.
So they started telling stories that they thought a 30 or 40 or 50-year-old person would appreciate. And that's a lot of weight for a character like Green Lantern to bear. So the stories got dark and adult and awful, and it had, of course, the effect of making comics verboten to children. No 9-year old's going to pick up that. No parent's going to buy that book for a 9-year old. No 9-year old's going to want to read it. And to understand, I think this is a sort of a disease that still infects comics. This idea that a character like Batman or Superman or all these other things should be dark and gritty is the phrase in comics.
Right.
I think it's wrong. I think it's wrongheaded.
I think it's overused. I can't go so far as to say that it's maybe completely wrongheaded. I would be a hypocrite just because of how much I've loved Frank Miller's Year One and Dark Knight Returns. Those were masterpieces, but those could have, they didn't have to change the tone of the industry. I mean, they could have been standouts and a way to say, well, here's a way to tell the story, but it certainly shouldn't be the way to tell these stories.
Yeah, those were intended. There was great examples, Hal, because those were intended to be standalone, not right. in this universe, not in continuity stories that became so popular and big that the continuity start wrapping them up into it, wrapping up those themes. You know, there's one, again, we're getting pretty far afield here, but there's one book, The Killing Joke, in which Barbara Gordon, Batgirl, is shot by the Joker and paralyzed. That was not intended to be canon. And yet the next time Batgirl shows up in the comics, she's paralyzed and she's a new character called Oracle. She's
Oracle. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think there's, I'm going to pontificate for a sec. I think there's a place for comics to work on two levels, for kids, for adults, all ages. If you think about things like Pixar, if you think about things like Marvel in the 60s, you know, Jack Kirby and Stan Lee were writing these great comics, bombastic, galaxy spanning, universe spanning stories of Galactus and all this stuff, worked for kids, adults could enjoy them. I think that's the sweet spot where comics ought to aim. And I think the pendulum shifts too far sometimes.
Yeah, I agree. And not every character can survive or make sense in a gritty environment. I'm no expert at all on any of the Green Lanterns, but that one in particular for me, it's tough to wrap my head around the idea of a serious, gritty Green Lantern who then is suddenly, you know, waving a massive green mallet to smush the bad guys or something. It just
exactly
his shtick to me doesn't lend itself to that. And I maybe that's a very sort of narrow and kind of one dimensional view. But
no, I think you're right. Yeah, you know, he becomes a grim and gritty space cop who can make giant boxing gloves with his magic ring.
Right.
Yeah. Which
how do you reconcile that?
And doing it in the movie, it turns into basically you turn him into Roger Rabbit. So it's not. It just gets, like you said, silly. The biggest problem with killing off characters, and this will come up later in the MCU, is you can't kill them off because you got to have them come back so that they can do more stuff because you found out that the audience likes them.
Yeah.
So this does cause a story problem when you decide on death for somebody, unless they can come back as a force ghost or something. It's different. Right. One of the few ones that I could think of is Black Widow. She never came back except they did a flashback when she was still alive, knowing
in
that
the MCU.
She,
right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tony Stark is dead in the movies and we know he's coming back in the next movie, but he's not Tony Stark, or maybe he's an alternate universe Tony Stark. He's, you know, Dr. Doom. We'll see what they do with that. I mean, there's a whole, it's a cliche in comic books that nobody stays dead forever. And in Marvel comics, there were three deaths that were permanent and would never be undone. One was Spider-Man's Uncle Ben. Uncle Ben's never coming back to life. One was a character called Captain Marvel, who is not the energy-based Captain Marvel or the Kree alien-based Captain Marvel we see in the films. It was an earlier version of Captain Marvel who died of cancer. And yeah, as far as I know, he's never been resurrected. Number three was Bucky. Bucky was dead for decades. And editorial fiat was, we are never going to bring Bucky back because Bucky's death was, and the guilt of Bucky's death was central to Captain America's story. And if you take out the responsibility of Bucky's death, what have you got with Captain America? And in fact, you know, there were issues of the Avengers, particularly I'm thinking of Avengers issues 56, where Captain America goes back in time to witness Bucky's death because he has questions about it. And there is zero question that Bucky actually died. Captain America saw him get blown to bits. And yet, by golly, they brought him back later, as we all know. And one can argue how well that's paid off. It certainly paid off for the MCU with its own continuity.
Now, Brian, in the comics continuity and that that death, Bucky was kind of a kid sidekick, wasn't he? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, he was Robin. He was gotcha. Captain okay. America's Robin. And in the 40s, comic creators loved to give heroes these kid sidekicks because they thought the kids would identify, readers would identify with the kid sidekick right. and not the hero. I never did. I was all on Batman, not Robin, but
likewise.
That was the theory. And so, yeah, Bucky was his Robin.
Yeah.
Almost just a straight up copy of it. And well, Bucky didn't. Wondering... Sorry, go ahead.
I was just wondering how many Robins there. I mean, every time I look at Robin in any form on the DC side, it's either Dick Grayson or Jason Todd or Tim Drake or right. Stephanie Brown or.
I think you just named Carrie them all.
Kelly.
Yes.
Don't forget Carrie Kelly.
Carrie Kelly and Damian Wayne.
Myself here. Oh, yeah. Damian. Yeah.
He was a Robin. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. And if I remember correctly, Jason die and then he came back, but he wasn't Robin anymore. It's like the way Robin became Nightwing. And
yeah. Dick Grayson became Nightwing. Jason Todd died. Of course, that was.
And got older while he was dead.
Yeah.
He matured up while he was dead.
I mean, that's. You know, who among us?
Yeah.
Does not
get you die, you go through puberty, and then you come back, you know.
Then you get re-released in a soft cover. It's,
You know, death in the comics is Captain America's died before in the comics. Superman, of course, died in 1993, very famously. Right. It was a news story when Superman died. New York Times covered the death of Superman. That turned out to be temporary. Because nobody's going to kill Superman.
Yeah. It got better. Wait, yeah.
If we give this goose CPR, it will lay another golden egg. I promise you that. So
so I guess the Bucky's death here is right in line with the comic book history of characters apparently plunging to their demises, but you never see the body.
Yeah.
Right.
And, thinking of different... crime fighters and other evil fighters of evildoers. That's how we lost Sherlock Holmes, and he made it back in a plunge off. Is it Rhinebeck Falls?
Reichenbach.
Reichenbach Falls. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great callback there, Jim. I like that.
Wow. Well, I have them once every decade. It'll be fun.
I think that's exactly right. I think Sherlock Holmes is the prototype for all these things. His mysterious plummet into the mists of the falls is that's pretty much what happens to Bucky here.
Yeah, yeah. Tune in next time for this. Yeah. it's an interesting. I mean, like you said, it's a trope, but it's a beloved trope. I don't think I think we can give them all a pass because it does help this particular storyline. And watching Captain America outside of the MCU. This is a nice standalone story. As the later, I've found that as the later phases go through, as you're watching MCU, you have to know who the characters are so that you can understand it. So it's probably diminishing returns. One of the things I enjoy about Captain America is you don't have to know the whole MCU to understand what's driving everybody in this particular film.
I think you're exactly right. I think that's when people talk about superhero fatigue. I think what they're partly talking about is the need to have watched every single miniseries and movie and to understand, well, who's this Captain Marvel and what has she got to do with Ms. Marvel and who's Wonder Man and, right. you know, all these things you've got to keep up with to understand the latest movie. I think but that's in, part of
even,
it.
Oh, excuse me. Even the fact that, you know, both Marvel and DC had Captain's Marvel, and how confusing that got. And then, of course, Brian, you mentioning this earlier iteration of Captain Marvel on the Marvel side. And to me, as a kind of a child of the late 60s and early 70s, you know, when I hear Captain Marvel, I'm picturing the guy standing next to the Winnebago yelling Shazam.
Yep, with the golden thunderbolt on his chest.
Yes, exactly. And yet another, you know, through a different lens, it's like here's a very young man traveling around with this senior citizen in a motorhome, and it's fine. none of this is even remotely off-putting.
Well, the history of the title Captain Marvel is a long legal battle that's not worth recounting in this podcast. But there's been some legal shenanigans for 60, 80 years about Captain Marvel.
Well, Hal, since you have brought up Saturday morning TV superheroes,
so
I do have to announce my undying crush on Diana Girl.
Oh, excellent. Yes.
Oh, that's yes, absolutely. With,
yeah. Right alongside Electro Woman.
Yeah, yeah.
And, well, wait, Diana Girl, was that?
She was Mean was Mary Electro Jean.
Yeah, no, yeah. But I'm trying to think. That's not Deborah Winger.
No.
Deborah Winger had a connection though to those.
She was
shows.
Wonder Woman. Wonder
She's
Woman.
Wonder Girl.
Yeah. Wonder Girl. Yeah. Wonder Girl. Wonder that's Girl. Right. Wonder Woman side.
Yeah,
Wonder
no.
Girl. Yeah, but
no,
I remember Diana Girl. I just couldn't remember if that was
Diana Girl started on into. The actress started on Judy something. I can't remember her last name, but Judy was her first name. And she was on Room 222, always with the signature ponytails, the double ponytails.
Oh,
and
sure.
Then she was Diana Girl. Then she was in Dodge commercials as Mean Mary Jean,
yeah.
Who was in a bunch of commercials.
Diana Girl was Judy Stranges.
Judy Stranges, there you go.
I happen to know was a good friend of our podcast guest, Mark Evaneers. Mark Miller.
Yeah. Wow.
No kidding. Small world. I wonder if she'd like to come on
yeah.
For a one-on-one with Jim. Well, Brian and I just sit there.
Hi, Judy. You're really nice. I really liked you back when I was 8.
Remember when you were Diana Girl?
That was amazing. That was awesome.
I drove a Dodge Dart. It was okay. oh, dear.
And well, we can't forget the lovely Isis from that same era.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah, yes.
Almighty Isis.
The internet tells me that Judy Stranges is 76 years old now. So
that used to sound old.
Yeah,
it did.
Yeah. I just had one note on this minute before we go too far afield. I think it's really neat that Gabe Jones is the one who captures Arnim Zola. That
yeah.
bashes through the ceiling. Captain America didn't do that. They gave that a bit of business to Gabe Jones. And I just, there's something about that that's a little surprising and subversive, a little unexpected, that you'd expect Captain America to be the one to make the nab, to nab the
right.
villain. And no, they gave it to Gabe. I think that's lovely.
Yeah, and it's like they didn't go by, well, who's the biggest star? They didn't give it to, say, Neil McDonough. They didn't give it to, you know, it's like whoever had the most airtime. But there he is. And he's the one that spoke German, so he could tell him you're under arrest in German.
German and French.
Yeah.
You know, and in the Howling Commandos books, they lean so heavily, both sarcastically on the Allied side and quasi-sincerely on the bad guys, out of the whole master race trope. And so they have a lot of fun in the comic books when it is somebody like Gabe Jones and his bugle, or Izzy Cohen. You know, a good Jewish kid from, I think, from Brooklyn. When he's the one who gets to put the capper on a fight, the reader, along with the commander, everybody's just savoring it because it's just putting a massive pin in that whole absurdity of the Master Race balloon.
I like that. It reminds me a little bit of Jesse Owens showing up Adolf Hitler's ideas of, you know, Aryan superiority.
Right.
And Jesse Owens just went over there and beat everybody else at their game.
Wow. It's also showing, I think, that the whole idea of the team, that everybody plays a part in this team. I mean, you've got Dernier or the Falsworth running the radio. Everybody's got a role, and every part is just as important as everybody else. I mean, Cap is just, you know, he's kind of their leader, but he's just another guy on the team. And it's nice seeing that teamwork between such a diverse crowd, being able to, you know, pull off a mission like this, stop a moving train full of full of biological weapons, and grab their Wernher von Braun. Wow. Well, this has been quite an episode. If you'd like to tell us stories about how actors from the past make you feel old, you can join in on the conversation over at Camp Lehigh, the Captain America Minute listeners base over on Facebook. And if you do like our show, please don't forget to subscribe and leave a like at the podcast streaming service where you found this episode. Also, please check out our website, capminute.com, for the latest about our podcast topics and guests. And please join us here next time on the Captain America Minute.
can do this all day.